Welcome to the Pussy Parlor Podcast. I am your host, Kitty Velour. I am a pole dance artist, glittery showgirl, and a pole dance and floor work instructor. Here at the parlor, I interview new guests each week, including pole dancers, strippers, showgirls, sex workers, and cabaret creatures of all kinds. Our parlor guest today is Jamie Taylor, an ex-stripper, pole dancer, and studio owner from Pembrokeshire, Wales. Jamie lived, breathed, and advocated for stripper style long before it was cool. Jamie actually coined the term stripper style, which is widely used in the pole industry. To help her students dial into their sensuality, Jamie created Serpent Power, the sensual movement method. In today's episode, we talk about the joys of working with naked women, how pole went from the strip clubs to the studio, and Jamie's Scarlet Show, a realm of sensual mysteries. Welcome to the Pussy Parlor.
Thank you for asking me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I love your branding. I love your IG channel and the whole idea of branding of this. I love it. I just love it.
Ah, thank you. I imagine the Pussy Parlor to be this kind of boudoir place where we just all chill out and talk about stripping and, you know, sexiness and all that fun stuff. So I like to pretend we're in a little realm right now where in our little sex positive space.
Yes, your brand comes across as really opulent. So it's a beautiful escape.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. My little corner of the internet. I'm really excited to talk to you today because you are an OG in the pole industry, and I'm sure that you have so many interesting tales to tell of how pole has grown and your time as a stripper. So how did you first get into stripping?
I think about 3 or 4 years before my first audition, I was living on stables as a mucker outer girl, not very glamorous. And I saw a documentary on Channel 4 called Strippers USA. And I hadn't heard of pole dancing before I saw that documentary. And I was addicted. I was watching it once a day, every day for a long time. And then eventually you stop watching, you stop being obsessed with stuff like that. And I just forgot about it for a couple of years. I was living with someone at the time at stables, and then we split up as friends. And I moved to where I'm moving now. And then I think after about 6 months of living here, it occurred to me, there's a train station down the road. I can get out of here because I was living in the middle of nowhere before. And so I thought that thing I remembered about the documentary, I thought I can actually do that now because I'm single. As long as I can find a dog sitter, I can get on that train and I can go. It wasn't the nearest club to me, but I learned about Fantasy Lounge in Cardiff. So I went, I took my friends for a little night out and I asked behind the bar, how do I work here? And then I had an audition a week later, like the interview. And then I think 2 weeks after that, I had the working audition and you know how it goes. I wanted to do it years before I actually did it. I just couldn't. So
yeah, I think lots of us have seen documentaries or we've seen pole dancing for the first time and we're like, how do we do this? Where do I sign up? How do I join in? Jamie later found the documentary that we are referring to here, and it's called Strippers, the Naked Stages. And I will link it in the show notes below so you can go and watch it. What year was that that you did that stripper audition, roughly?
I'm assuming it was 2004 because I got my first metal fast drill into the ceiling pole, one piece pole in 2005, because it said 2005 in the receipt. That's the only reason that I remember any of this. So I'm assuming, I think it was 2004. And I know it was summer because I remember what I was wearing from the train station to the club. It was like summer clothes. And that's all I can remember.
What was it like when you started then? What were the other strippers like? What were you required to do? What was the vibe like?
So I've worked in 4 clubs and Fantasy Lounge was the only club that there was a little bit of bullying going on. Everywhere else was wonderful. Not towards me, but there was this, and it was the same girl I saw during my interview as well. And she was called Nicola, and she was really tiny, and she was from Birmingham, and she had her followers, friends, and there were two sisters called Peaches and Lacey and a girl called Sharon. And those were the four that dominated the club. And Nicola was a bit of a bully. I've seen her do some silly things to newbies and stuff. I never had a problem, but I remember her the first time I ever saw pole in real life. I remember seeing her when I was sitting there just before my interview started, and she was just still at the top of this very short pole, but she was short, doing princess grip figurehead, just ogling this table full of guys. And she had white boots on, white thong, and this white top. It was a really short top. So when her princess grip was above her head, like her arms above her head, the top rode up.
Nice.
And she was just ogling this table for ages in this pose. And I thought, that is the best thing I have ever seen in my life. I was transfixed. It was amazing. I'm like, that's pole dancing. She can do that. And that's why she wears that top. So it can come up and you're allowed to do this. You can do this here. This is amazing. It was like the best thing ever. I was obsessed with her. And then between the interview and the audition, I tried to find everything white because she wore white and I couldn't find anything white. But that's the only pole dancer I think I really paid attention to that night. So it stuck in my head, get some white.
It's like a sort of titty wonderland when you see, you know, it's the first time, I think, as well, when you've been to a strip club for the first time, where you see this kind of uninhibited sexuality. And it is just really exciting to be around and be in that environment.
I was instantly relaxed. I felt at home, instantly relaxed. And because there was like a table dance on the left and there was a topless pole. Table dancers everywhere. You couldn't see the full nudes because they were down on what we used to call Punani Alley. Because it was just a long line stage with chairs lined up with a lot of distance. Fantasy Lounge was like 2 foot, 3 foot distance, I think, at the time, which was a shame. But yeah, you're right. It was just, and I remember the first night in my working audition, I went upstairs to the dressing room and this same person, Nicola, had her leg up on a table wearing nothing, surrounded by bloody tissues because she'd just come on and she was angry and she was swearing. And everybody thought it was fine and it was normal. And I'm like, I'm at home. I'm so at home right now. This is just beautiful. Everybody likes each other. We're women being women. There's no shame. I just love it here. So it was great. I knew that was my thing.
I do miss that about the strip clubs, just being around naked people is quite fun. What was it like in terms of the dances? Was it, you said table dances. Can you explain what a table dance is?
I think from what I remember, full nude dancers, which were down at Punani Alley in Fantasy Lounge, were 20 and table dancers were 10. And table dancers were topless only and they were done at any table, like any table. And that was the only dances we had, were the private ones where you walk to the end of the club and you had to queue with your customers because they could only fit, I think, 6 or 7 dancers on Punani Alley. And so if that was all full up, which it usually was on busy nights, you had to entertain your customer standing next to you in your queue until there was a space, like your turn. That's hard. That's difficult.
Wow.
You can't just not talk to them and stand there and look around. But table dances just happened at your customer's table, which, you know, it's fine. I love that actually, because it's a really good form of advertising. If your table dance was really good, then you'd probably get another one or somebody would want a private.
Was Punani Alley like a row of chairs, but was it open or was it private?
It was down the far end of the club. So there was no more club where Punani Alley was. And the back wall was mirrors. And what faced the mirrors was a little dip, like a 1 foot dip where there was a line of chairs. And that's where your customer sat. And you're up on this long platform, 1 foot up, next to like 6 or 7 other dancers. So when they paid £20, they got to see lots of other people as well. This only happened. It wasn't this way in Swansea or Newport Gents Club or Bridge End Blue. We had booths in Bridge End Blue. Yeah. And it was a bit like this in Swansea Gents Club, actually. Yeah, because we didn't have booths there either. We just went to the end of the club and it was a long sofa. We were still all in a row.
I guess it varies from club to club as well. It seems everywhere had kind of a different setup and different rules as well. Were a lot of people doing stage shows when you started? Was it a lot of pole dancing?
Stage shows were a thing for some people. You always had the option not to bother. And you always had the option to just get your pole rota over with and just have a bit of a swish around and then get back off and work the floor. But there was a few of us who used to love the stage show. I did. Like in Newport Gents Club, the staff always had ready for me a pint of water with ice in, the fan on, like a little fan I could put my hair up and dry the back of my neck, and a glass of white wine with ice cubes in it after my stage show because I would be dripping. And I know you're supposed to go off and go around the tables and make some money, but I'd rather do a good stage show, dry off, and then go around. So my priorities were all wrong when it came to making money, but I had a lot of fun, so it was okay.
I was the same, though. I always wanted to be on stage, and I think it kind of helped to warm me up so then I could go out and then approach customers, but it kind of gave me that boost of energy, like that being energized. You know, that's probably why we've become dancers, pole dancers now. And I know some strippers, it was all about the hustle for them, and then they've gone on to do stuff now that's kind of more related to that. But if you love to dance, then it's always going to be that way you want to spend the most time.
Yeah. A friend of mine I used to work with in Swansea mainly, and then Newport, she used to wear a watch when she was working and time herself at least 5 dances an hour. She was such a businesswoman, and she was so bored of stage. And like when the March last year thing happened, I was saying to her, "You're really good at pole. Why don't you teach pole?" And she's like, "Because pole's really boring." Okay, that's fair enough. Okay. I was like, yeah, our priorities were different at the club. So,
do you have a favorite club that you worked at?
Oh, that was Newport Gents Club. Yeah, I miss that place. It was amazing there. I think it was just the vibe. It was the really lovely, intimate, friendly vibe of the tiny Swansea Gents Club, but it was big. And it had that brass pole that goes from the bottom of the club all the way up to the top. I never even went near the middle of the pole. I wasn't a climber. I really wasn't one of those polos. I would stay on the floor, all over the floor, stand back up. That was it. But you did have a lot of polos right at the top doing crazy stuff. It was amazing. But yeah, I loved that club. That was the vibe there. It was just very cool. Yeah.
How long did you strip for?
4 years. And I can't remember if it was under 4 years or after. Like, I really can't remember. Because I did mix it up with a lot of other stuff. Like, I was doing parties as well. And these little separate shows that I used to go around. I used to be a warm-up for Caprice and Antonia. And they were the rudest stage shows, like ever. Even if you wanted to not be the warm-up, you were always going to be the warm-up. Do you know what I mean? They were creative, let's just say, very creative.
Do you remember when there was a shift from pole dance just being in strip clubs to then being in pole studios and becoming classes and such?
That kind of blended for me too. So I can't think of it like it was then one thing and then the other. There was a gap between me stopping stripping and teaching pole. I think it was less than a year, but it was over 6 months. And I remember there being a big shock for me, a massive difference between spending 4 years working with strippers, which, as you know, is just an amazing environment. It's just a really good camaraderie, sistery environment. And then teaching pole students who aren't as nice to you. So I remember I had to get my head around that. It took me about 6 months to get my head around that. Like, okay, yeah. Strippers are really upfront and truthful to your face in a nice way. And then pole students, not so much. There's a bit of head work with students that you won't get with fellow professionals. So that was a massive mental shift for me. And also, I never thought it was a big deal when my boobs came out of my whatever I was wearing, because we had no sports. You know, we have pole gear now. We didn't have pole gear then when we were teaching pole then. It was just whatever. If you came from the clubs, you'd probably teach in whatever you used to work at the clubs in. There was a phase where people were wearing boxer boots, the same boots that boxers wore.
Wait, what shoes do boxers wear? I don't even know.
Yeah. So boxer boots, they come up to your knee and they're all laced crisscross at the front and they come in all these multicolors like blue and red and they're flat. And they're not massively flattering. But there was this push. It was trainers first, to do pole in trainers or bare feet. Then there was a little push to do it in boxer boots. It was the most hideous thing. Because when pole came out of the clubs and some people tried to put it into the gyms and turn it into a purely fitness route, obviously they didn't want the platforms. They didn't want the shoes because it's hard to do aerobic warm-ups in shoes. And I think actually as well, if you didn't come from the clubs, you didn't know what else to do with pole other than make it a fitness thing. Like, how would you know what we were doing with it? And I've always said it's not about a sunwheel spin. It's not about a body wave. It's not about anything. It's not about the moves, what we do with the pole, as we've proved with people who didn't come from the club teaching choreo. Like, the choreo is amazing. It's precise and it's flawless and it's perfect. It would not work in the club, my love, because it's not about how many spins you have or tricks or... So I suppose if you didn't come from the club, you would only know how to make money from this brand new pole thing that had no backing that you respected in any way because it only came from strippers. So you think you can do whatever the hell you like with it without a pushback. Let's turn it into a fitness thing. Let's wear trainers or bare feet or boxer boots, which was awful. Just on like big baggy shorts and big t-shirts. It was hideous back then. It was really hideous. But anyway, what got me onto that tangent is when I started teaching civilians pole and I was wearing what I used to wear at the club. Like, if I popped out in any way, I remember teaching once for like 5 whole minutes with a boob out, and it was horrifying to these women and they didn't know where to look and they were embarrassed. And I'm like, okay, this is new to me too, that I have to now cover up all the time. Massive mind shift. It's so different. Pole in the club to pole in the studio. Massively different.
And at that time, I guess there was a lot more, we need to legitimize pole by making it a fitness and a sport thing. What were the attitudes around pole in general? Was there a lot of sanitization happening?
There was one dancer. She did promo a video, a choreo of hers way back when, to that song. I can't remember what it's called, but the chorus is, you don't have to take your clothes off to have a good time, have a good time. Which was a bit of a dig to anybody that didn't really try to wrap up and dress up. It was less about people trying to say that it came from Malakam or circus. And it was more about, they were literally trying to say, not that it didn't come from the clubs, but that it doesn't have to be that way. That's what the narrative was, that I thought was more insulting than these weird history deniers that we have now. It was, they wouldn't even mention that it came from the clubs, but if anybody brought it up, it was like, but it doesn't have to be that way. It's not only about that. What it actually is about, and we're trying to change the stigma, we're trying to turn it around. I'm like, how dare you? You're trying to change something that you just found yesterday. Because where it actually came from isn't good enough for you. But you want what we've got anyway. It was just insulting because of that. I found that more insulting at the time than this weird, it must have come from Malakam thing, which came later. I think that's something that they grabbed onto, but that came later. It was more just, our pole is better than that, you know, so come to us.
And was that, that was most people believe that, was there a group of you that were more sticking to the stripper style and just celebrating it as it was?
Honestly, to be brutally honest, and I'm nitpicking now with details, but Deb Riley stuck with it 100%. Like, she never took the shoes off. She didn't even go through a barefoot trainer phase that I can remember. Glory Pearl was very loud and vocal the entire time, as was I. I never dropped the shoes. I even purposely messed up a couple of regional and final competition entries just to get this point across. Like, that's what my sets were about, rather than, yay, let's try and win this comp. I can literally only remember, unless I've forgotten someone or someone I don't know about, not likely, me, Deb Riley, Glory Pill. Those are the only ones. And I think everybody else, even if it was just like monetary pressure or just trying to get by because it was really heavy then, went down the fitness route a bit in their studios, or we didn't have studios then, in our function rooms that we were renting out above pubs, because that's all we had at the time. Because, you know, a lot of us weren't in a gym. Yeah, there was very few of us. It was definitely seemed like it was 2/3 of the UK industry was fitness based. And then ironically and awfully enough, the outsiders were the people that came from the clubs.
And was this around late noughties, like 2010 or something like that?
I only started teaching properly in 2006. So obviously it was from then. I would say the only time that really came to an end was when all the people, the very, very big names who were being downright cheeky, I was going to say try to suppress stripper style, but actually just being downright cheeky to anything sexy pole, they turned around pretty quickly when Michelle Shimmy became big, when she blew up and she brought us really hardcore tricks. Hunter, shush, babe. She brought us really hardcore tricks in shoes. And when that happened, everybody that had been giving us hassle suddenly bought a pair of shoes and suddenly started doing their cup grip deadlifts in their shoes. And that's when everything turned around. It's when the Aussies made it cool.
Yeah. Because I remember I started pole in 2012, and I remember Shimmy and Maddie being quite big then. And that was the first time I'd seen someone very glorified that was wearing heels and doing all these kind of bendy poses. At the time, there wasn't any specific styles of sexy, I guess. It was just all one thing. So now we know it as more of an Aussie showgirl kind of style. But at the time, that was probably one of the few exposures that I had to seeing a pole dancer in heels. So it's interesting to hear you say that as well about Shimmy. How did it shift from the strip clubs into classes? Like, why do you think that happened?
I don't know. I wish I'd thought of it earlier. I didn't think it would work where I lived. So I held back. Like, I knew it was kind of happening, but I wasn't interested. And I was still in the clubs and I was still doing my private parties. I was happy doing what I was doing. And I didn't really think about teaching. It did cross my mind a bit when I had that gap. I'm pretty sure it was obviously happening elsewhere in the world before the UK finally caught up. And I think it only did because some of us were thinking, we've been polling for a while now. It's been a couple of years or a few years. If we don't teach this, people who aren't going to poll are going to teach this. I think that's why it crossed over. It's like, if anybody's going to do it, we're going to do it. I had a poll in my middle room downstairs. And I was teaching friends, like they say, oh, can you teach me this? If it were over for a bit. And I'm like, yeah, it'll be fun. But I wasn't teaching properly until a friend of mine who I gave a couple of classes to downstairs, and she hated it. She taught belly dancing, and she took me out to lunch once to tell me that she's taken a course in either Cardiff or London with pole cats, and she's now going to teach pole. And I'm like, okay, you don't even like pole. You said you didn't understand why it hurt, but now you're going to teach pole, and you've had two classes with me and one day with pole cats. So I created DG in like 1 week because I was angry. I was like, I'm sorry, love. If you don't like pole, don't teach it. I love pole. I'm teaching it. So that's the only reason I was teaching. So my belly dancing friend, who's still a friend, wasn't going to teach it in the same street I lived in, considering she didn't even like it very much. But that's why I started. And I think it's the same with everybody else. They were kind of like, this might be a thing. And we've been polling for a few years now. Let's see if we can, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about that question as well. I think people always gravitate towards a pole. Like, if you put a pole in the middle of the room, people will always touch it and they'll want to go on it. And it's just this thing that probably strippers have noticed. People are attracted to this and they want to try it. It's like a playground type equipment thing for most people. And maybe they just thought, let's capitalize on this. You know, those that enjoy doing pole work. But yeah, I noticed that before because I had a pole on a stage and I had other acts in the show. And they weren't pole acts. But every single performer touched that pole. They just wanted to be near it because it's something to like anchor themselves to. And I just noticed that and I thought it was really interesting that, you know, people, yeah, somehow gravitate towards a pole. It has that kind of energy about it. But yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see how pole has evolved. How do you feel pole has changed if you compare to the noughties to now? What are the biggest kind of differences that you notice?
I don't think it's got better.
We just have new problems.
It's the same with everything, isn't it? It's got more technical, it's got more difficult, it's got more slick. And you can say that about absolutely everything, whether it's an art form or not. It's what happens. It's natural progression. Whether that's better or not, I'm not sure. I think a lot of it has lost its soul and it's lost its vibe. And it's great for people who want to get perfect with anything technical and physically challenging. I think the question, linking this with the last question, the question could be, if it never turned into a fitness thing, what would it be now? Mm-hmm. And I really think when it got turned into that fitness movement that was huge, it missed a mark massively, because it could have been a beautiful confidence boosting thing for women, strippers teaching women how to own their sexuality, where that deep red confidence comes from, rather than the, you know, pastel family friendly confidence coaching we're supposed to fall for. And I see it coming back round a bit now. You do get dancers that are doing online classes and workshops about that, which is brilliant. It's finally coming back round. But I think, where would the industry be 15 years on if it has started there? How beautiful would it be now if it was never a fitness thing, if it was never about building big shoulders or getting abs or learning deadlifts or how complicated your trick can be or how much kips and flips you can put into choreo? If it's just more about, quite simply, what works on a strip club stage and why. Like, if you never know even a 360 step around or a spin or a climb or an invert, you could still own a strip club stage by just that posture, that attitude, that mental thing, that stance, that just oozing it, you know. And it's not really about choreo or spins or tricks or anything.
Yeah.
But I think we'll know, because it's coming back round now. It really is. There's so many different types of artists and teachers and things out there. It's coming back round. It's just, I would love to have known where things would have been if the fitness movement didn't happen, you know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what an alternate future would have looked like. I've always felt quite self-conscious about the fact that the way I teach is very much a bit airy-fairy, like how you feel, and they're tapping into like emotion and intention. And I've always worried that maybe I need to be more technical, or I need to be more anatomical and talk about the body and stuff more. But I'm kind of coming into my own now, where I'm just comfortable with that's the way that I teach things. And that's, you know, it's different. There's not as many people doing it like that. And I think more people should do it like that, because that's one of the most amazing things about pole, is the way it makes you feel. So why not just focus on that and forget about the rest?
Yeah, hell yeah. Nobody knows what the Latin name for muscles are anyway. Nobody cares. Technical teachers, when it comes to pole, they're like a dime a dozen. What we need now for is more soulful teachers that can actually teach the essence of what it is to be successful in that club environment to women who never have the opportunity to be there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good word for it as well, soulful. We need more of that kind of vibe, more energy.
Yeah.
What was it like transitioning to becoming a pole studio owner and a teacher? Because I think when you go from that stripper world into something else, it's quite a hard phase to go through. It's a change of shift of identity.
I was charging peanuts when I started, so that was a big shift. I found when I jacked my prices up, I had my more perfect clientele that I got on with more when I started charging properly. So that was a learning curve, which was ironic, because I wasn't making peanuts in the club. So why I was charging peanuts for pole is just something I may need to delve into myself about at some point. Trying to find out the people that you want to work with something that's so new. I was so busy when I started, like so unbelievably busy, because it was novel. So of course it was going to blow up. And of course the environment was different. I just spent about 4 years working with the kind of woman that was just so different than a student. And one's not better than the other, but there is a different kind of customer service with the customer at the club compared to a student. And I never, and I still don't ever, and I stand by this, want to hustle a student. I never want to treat a student like I would treat a customer. I don't want to have a fake face. I don't want to lie. I don't want to laugh at jokes I don't think are funny. And I will never, ever give a fake compliment. Ever, ever, ever. So if you get a compliment from me in my studio, I mean it. I'm not just saying it. I will never, ever hustle a student. But what I found out from teaching is, my God, students can hustle you. That took me about a year to get my head round. You have to be quite hard as a studio owner. When Erin started teaching at my studio too, I noticed that she became the instructor and I became more of the studio owner. So she never had to deal with any of the problems or lay down any of the rules. I had to. So I was the big bad wolf then. I was the one that always had to like bring the bad news. And if there was something they would bring to her, she'd bring it to me. And she knew that she never had to be the one with the bad news. She played on it. It was all down to me. So when you're the big boss, you might not be anybody's friend anymore. It's really not all, I've got the studio to myself to pull in every day. It's really not about that. Really not about that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of responsibility and yeah, you can't, it's that difference between being friends with everyone, but then being the boss and having to assert your boundaries.
It's so tough. Boundaries are my biggest problem. It's really hard to establish boundaries and be authentic at the same time, because my authentic is very open. But yeah, you can't be very open and have boundaries. I've stopped chatting with students at night. I don't send them memes anymore. See, these are my problems that I started. They're all me. So yeah, I have to be strict with myself, really.
But you've created a really beautiful space. All of your students that I've met when I've come to do workshops and your events are amazing and really carry your essence and your energy. So you've done a really good job with that. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your Scarlet show, your Scarlet weekend, and tell me about the Serpentine Realm?
This is tough. Right. So, and you know why? One of the reasons Scarlet show is the way it is because there's certain things I'm bound not to talk about. And there's some things I will never, ever want to talk about. I mean, as an example, stripper style and sensual movement, I hold it so close to my heart and I live it and I breathe it. What some of the things about Scarlet Show and Serpent Power are 1,000 times more personal to me than pole will ever be. So I'm never going to teach it. I'm never going to talk about it. And I'm kind of bound anyway. But Scarlet Show is a pole dance show, I guess. I think it's hard to describe, isn't it? Because if you haven't been, no, but it's not a pole dance show. Just as you can say, Serpent Power is not just a few moves. And it's hard to explain because I choose it to be and because there's so much I can't talk about. But there are things that I will never speak about verbally. You can get it from other people who don't know what they're talking about. And it's the same with Serpent Power, but nobody said I could not put it out in an artwork. So I did. And that's what Scarlet Show is. So it's the mysteries and then some.
Serpent Power. Jamie and I go a bit esoteric with our language here. So we might sound a little bit vague, but it's quite difficult to describe. But essentially, we're referring to a more mindful, spiritual way of dancing. It's like stripper style yoga. You dance sensually and connect with yourself. Having taken Serpent Power classes, I can tell you that it's very hypnotic, very relaxing. You can check out examples of this on Jamie's website, which will be linked in the show notes. Now, back to the interview.
And the Serpentine Realm is the place you cross over to if Serpent Power works for you. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. And if it doesn't work for you, that's absolutely fine. You know, it's Serpent Power is really Marmite and it's supposed to be. Just like everything I create is completely Marmite. You either get it or you don't. And I'm totally fine with that. But yeah, the Serpentine Realm is what you go to once the serpent power starts working for you, either in the first track or like four tracks in, or maybe a couple of weeks into practice, or if you're lucky, 24/7. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's quite spiritual, actually. And I remember having a conversation with you. I can't remember how long ago it was. And we were talking about spirituality. And I said, I don't feel very spiritual. I don't really get it. Because I think I had a very religious upbringing, so I had to distance myself from it for a while. And more recently, I've been really getting into it now and really understanding it more, and how I've described pole dance and stripper style as quite sacred. And now I'm kind of understanding why I say that, because there's something about it that feels very wholesome, and not just about your body, but the way you feel and your energy and your intention. But it's so difficult to describe to somebody. You just have to kind of get there by yourself.
Yeah, you do. We can facilitate, but there's some things you have to do practically yourself. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And yeah, for me, it's something that I had to just find when it was the right time, basically.
It's strange you say that, because you already had it. It was in there. Because yeah. I remember we were doing some SP in Devon, I think. And I could see you sitting there like into it and really interested, but I can see you didn't really get it. Not that you were confused, you just didn't see the point. Yeah, and I was speaking to Izzy afterwards. There's a reason she doesn't see the point, is because she's already got it. Like, she's there. Yeah. So she doesn't understand, like, why are we doing this? Because, like, I wake up like this, you know?
I think it's something that was happening unconsciously, and it took me a while to consciously realize, oh, you're doing this thing. Like, you're. And it's something that I think everyone needs to explore, that side of pole. It's somewhere you have to be a bit more vulnerable and you have to dig a little bit deeper. It's more about your mindset around things. And I feel a lot of people shy away from that. Something as well that I've been thinking about a lot as well, it's about the past lives thing. And ever since you said that to me about how do we know what we know, and how did we find it? Like, I found it really early when I was quite young. How did I find that? And you were saying about maybe we've had past lives, or we've been some kind of like sexual priestess, or we've done something to do with this. And I find that really fascinating now. I would definitely like to explore that more. I've probably lost everyone who's listening to this. They're like, what are they talking about? We've gone really airy-fairy now.
Listening to this on the tube and they've missed their stop twice while looking very confused.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to take us into the love, learn and dream section of the podcast, which is three questions that I ask all of my guests. So what do you love most about your job?
Right, there's two parts. I've thought about this. One of them, and I realize that every time I go into the studio, well, when class is alive, not so much when I have a Zoom, because the setup is different. I'm teaching on Skype right now rather than Zoom, because my students prefer Skype. And when I go into the studio, Hunter's with me and he has his dinner in a puzzle ball. He pushes that across the floor. So that's not my favorite thing about my job. It's really loud. But when it's live, I'll go in and I'll blast music while I clean. And the fact that I can listen to music at my workplace, anything, absolutely anything I want to listen to, I just feel so spoiled. And I feel so grateful and so spoiled. I mean, it's usually Nine Inch Nails to clean. The other thing I like about my job is just giving women a different option to be, and a different option to express themselves, a different option to think, an environment with, I mean, you probably get the same thing when you're teaching live, maybe online. I'm not sure. I'm just teaching my students online. But when new people come to you live, the things that you're allowing them to do and think and say, they've never occurred that they can do before. Like, they're coming to you for that. But when they're in that environment, like, well, I can completely be free now, and I can laugh about this, and I can joke about this. I can be like a real red-blooded woman here, and there's no judgment. That's the favorite thing. I feel really spoiled and really grateful and really rich that my job involves that. And because I'm a bit angry and I've got a chip on my shoulder about that anyway, it's kind of my rebellion. I'm getting back at the system a little bit by letting women do this in my environment, you know. Yeah. So that's my favorite thing about my job.
Yeah, amazing. I think our spaces that we create are definitely just rebellious in that they even exist.
Yeah, God, yeah. Especially in this day and age, for sure. Yeah.
What is the biggest lesson you've learned along your journey?
I was thinking about this earlier and I'm not sure, because there's been lots of little ones. Like, obviously we learn like lots of little ones along the way, but the big one, I'm not sure. I tend to, and I was asked by someone else a couple of weeks ago, what one person inspires you the most? And there's never been one person. It's like lots of different people at different times, depending on what I'm lacking and what I need to learn from someone. You know, they'll inspire me if they've got something about them and I don't at the time. And I think it's with, there's never one big lesson. It's just lots and lots of little ones that ideally stick in your head and you learn from, you know, so you can just be constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So yes, one thing, just lots and lots of little things. Like in the early days, not charging peanuts, then knowing that I don't have to sell to everyone. I can have my perfect client and that I don't get on with everyone, you know, so I think that's, like you said, my students are damn awesome. All of them are just so damn awesome, because the ones that don't fit in don't stay long. So, and if you like drama, and if you're really negative, and if you're after anything other than what I offer, you simply won't stay long. So yeah, maybe that's my biggest lesson, knowing that you do get to choose who you work with. And yes, bills need to be paid, but my God, there's no point dreading going to work. So
yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the lessons that we learn as well are quite subliminal. So it's just something you subtly take in. So it's not like you could write down, I learned this today. It's something a little bit more subtle than that. And also, I think having an abundant mindset, I think as well, I think for a lot of dancers or anyone who's creative, we've had this rhetoric that we're going to be a struggling artist and you can't make money doing this because it's not a real job. But I think we can change that. I don't think that's true anymore. I think we can do whatever we want. If we put our minds to it, we can design our own life. We can create abundance for ourselves. I definitely believe that.
Yeah, definitely. If you're brave and stupid enough at the same time to go for it, because
which I think I am.
Yes. You have to have the ovaries to try. You have to be stupid to try when everything in the world is telling you not to. You just have to. And then what really gets you across is a hell of a lot of desperation and terror. That'll help too. So yeah. If you can live like that, guys, go for it. Woo. Yeah. For sure.
The dream question: in a world where you had unlimited budget, unlimited access to any venue or place, and no health or safety restrictions, what would you do in your dream routine?
Ooh, routine. See, years ago, I used to say, first, I would live in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by green. I have since learned, since one of my friends moved, and I've spent a lot of time at their house, that I'm not productive in that environment. So if I ever moved to the middle of nowhere, you'd never hear from me again. I'd just be happy sitting in the garden forever. So I need to stay in this awful town with too much noise, and it inspires me to do stuff. But I'm actually starting to do it. So if anything good came from this awful situation of these constant flipping lockdowns, and this time away from my beloved DG, it has forced me to create something. I can't say what it is yet, because I know you're supposed to get excited and pre-sell stuff that's not built, but that stresses me out too much. Okay, I will say it's not simply movement-based. It's a 24/7 thing. It's something that lockdowns can't take away from you. It's definitely Scarlet Show and Serpent Power-based. And it's actually marketed, not specifically at polders. It probably won't have much to do with pole. So, yeah.
Intriguing.
Yeah, that's all I can say right now. Yeah.
Love it. Where can we find you online?
Oh, God, what's my handles? I'm on Facebook. I never remember these. Bad, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to put it in the show notes anyway.
Yeah.
Just to remind people to go follow, go subscribe to all of the things, like all the things.
I would say my Facebook personal profile is more interesting. If you want any OG polling, IG, and forget about the pages for now. So, yeah.
Yes. Jamie's the best person for old school stripper style. You actually coined the term stripper style, didn't you, as well?
I did. I really wish I'd TM'd it. No, I'm joking. It's fine. I don't want anybody else using it. If I, you know, that whole hindsight thing, if I'd have known that it would have got popular, my God. I thought it was nothing. I just used it in a post off the cuff. And then Badass Grant said it on Facebook. And everybody thought, oh, that's really, really cool. And I was like, oh, they like that? That's interesting. And then years later, yeah.
Now it's a thing. Yeah. Hello.
It's a thing.
Thanks everybody for listening to this episode. Thank you, Jamie, for being on the podcast. And we will see you in the next one, everybody. Bye.
Later.
Thank you so much for joining us today at the Pussy Parlor. If you're left wanting more, we have extra pussy episodes on Patreon, where you get extended interviews with bonus questions. Just search for Kitty Velour Patreon. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Pussy Parlor. That's pussy with an X, PXSSY, because we're not allowed the word pussy on Instagram. The tragedy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps support the pod. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Stay filthy and stay fabulous. See you soon.